Here's the 30-second lesson on what legends know. Never practice nunchucks in a crowded room. Never eat chole before a road trip. Always take your shirt off before you iron it. Don't take a call near a swimming pool. And don't forget, saving is not investing. Legends don't just save, they invest in mutual funds. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
Now, is there trouble in Kashmir or is there a peaceful election taking place in Kashmir? As of now, Kashmir, across the two sides of the line of control, presents different pictures. On the Indian side, Srinagar has just had peaceful voting. It's a large constituency which also has Pulwama, Shopian areas which saw a lot of trouble in the past. And the voting percentage, we'll get the final numbers in a day or so. Election Commission of India now takes its time. But looks like the voting percentage is the highest since 1996. Maybe by the time the Election Commission tallies everything, it will come to about that much. That is close to the 40% mark. So that is one. At the same time, across the line of control, we are seeing different kinds of pictures. And these are the kind of pictures and videos which we might have got used to seeing on our side of Kashmir for many, many, many decades. Now, see these pictures as I talk. Maybe I'll take a break for a few seconds. And you can see these pictures. Also, you can see some of these on the other half of the screen while I am talking. Now, you can see that there are civil disturbances. There are civil disturbances and there are protests. Now, these pictures of disturbances, tear gas, people shouting and screaming, and you can also hear some commentary. These, as you can figure out also from the language, these are from across the line of control. Because one big difference between the territory this side of the line of control, that is the Union Territory of Jammu and Kashmir, which is going to the polls now. In fact, in all of the Union Territory of Jammu and Kashmir, which includes Jammu, Udhampur, Doda, Kishtwar, Poonch, all of Rajouri, that entire Union Territory, the percentage of people who speak Kashmiri language is 70%. Whereas the percentage of people who speak Kashmiri language across the line of control is just about 5%, if at all, and that too in the northern areas. Most of the rest speak, I know that it will offend people if I say so, because language is a very, very sensitive issue. They speak various versions of Mirpuri, etc., or what is called the Jammu kind of language, but not very distant from the Punjabi language of the Potwa region of Pakistan or the Rawalpindi region of Pakistan. So there is an ethnic and linguistic distinction. That is what you also hear in these protests. Of the about 42 lakh population of Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, almost 100% are Muslim. Almost 100%. There are about 5,000 Christians, if at all, in a couple of the urban areas. Maybe a few thousand Ahmadis, whether you want to call them Muslim or not. Ya apki shraddha ki baat hai, I leave it to you. You can decide that. But otherwise, it's almost an entirely Muslim population. Again, I know that you will ask me, what about Gilgit-Baltistan? The Pakistanis consider that to be a separate territory and try to administer it as such, whereas for India now, it was always a part of Jammu and Kashmir. Now it's a part of Union Territory of Ladakh. So Gilgit-Baltistan region has about 15 lakh people, almost all of them are Muslims. Now, what are these protests about? There is a lot of schadenfreude on the Indian side. That is, see, this is how troubled Kashmiris are in the Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, and everybody is now desperate to join India. That is where schadenfreude comes in. We have to, at the same time, look at the facts. This protest is not a political protest as of now. And that is where the little bit of the clutter lies. The larger clutter lies in the status of the Kashmir region, which is under Pakistan's control right now, what the Pakistanis call Azad Jammu and Kashmir. That is a larger clutter, which is what also helps us understand Pakistan's problems and particular and peculiar challenges in their dealings with the Kashmir issue. Because in their national politics and in the very raison d'etre of Pakistan, in the way they've defined the Kashmir issue, they've now got really caught with this complex status of the territory, of the part of the territory that they control. I will come to that. That is the opening these disturbances are giving us. Now, what are these disturbances, first of all? First of all, this is a group of non-political people, including traders, including the civil society organizations. And what are their demands? They are not demanding autonomy from Pakistan. They are not demanding that they join India. They are not demanding, in fact, the demands are not political. Their demands at this point are roti, kapda, makan, atta, dal kind of demands. They are demanding a lower price of wheat and atta, wheat flour prices, or subsidy that the Pakistan government, Pakistan Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, see his tweet, right? He spoke up on this, he wrote that tweet, he expressed concern, and then he has allocated 23 billion Pakistani rupees. That is about $82-83 million. The equation between, when you see Pakistani rupees, don't think Indian rupees. Or if you do, multiply by about 3, in fact, a little more than 3, because at this point, Pakistani rupee is 277 to the dollar. That gives us a basic idea. So he is allocated 2300 crore Pakistani rupees by way of subsidies on atta, on wheat flour, to the people of their side of Kashmir. Their side of Kashmir, the Kashmir occupied by Pakistan, today has about 42-43 lakh people, just over 4.3 million. Our side of Kashmir, not Ladakh, Union Territory of Jammu and Kashmir, that should have, because the last census 2011 said 1.22 crores, I'd say generally about 1.4 crores or thereabouts. Remember, Kashmir Valley, Jammu and Kashmir in India does not have a high birth rate. They have their birth rates really controlled, fertility rates really controlled. So it's not as if population is really booming there. That's not the case. It's a very well controlled population growth rate. Now, this population of 40, 42, 43 lakh people, they've been given this subsidy on atta, wheat flour. What else are they demanding? They are demanding that they be charged less for electricity. Also, they are protesting taxes, cesses, or what you might call maybe an equivalent of GST on electricity payments. They are protesting particularly, and that's where a little bit of the federalism comes in. They are protesting that it is their hydro plants, that means hydro plants located in their region, that's producing a lot of power. The Mangla Dam system, for example, of part of that is also the Neelam Jhelum project, which produces 2,600 megawatts of hydro power. So they say that why are we being charged the same price for power as everybody else in Pakistan? Because we are producing this power, just charge us on the basis of what it costs to produce this power right here. And third demand is very much like an NGO demand, civil society demand. It says that elites of the region, particularly bureaucrats, civil servants and others, they live very lavish lifestyles and they have many privileges. Those should be taken away. So that's how this protest started. And the local government wasn't able to handle it. Local government also has trouble. And there is no surprise why, because the local government, or what the Pakistanis call Azad Kashmir government, that depends for its sustenance on grants or handouts from Pakistan government. Pakistan government has problems of its own, so that money hasn't been coming. So Chaudhry Anwarul Haq, the quote-unquote prime minister, they still use prime minister and president on their side, so-called prime minister of their side of Kashmir, he's been saying that because I'm not getting any aid or any grant from the federal government of Pakistan, which had been promised to him, he's not even able to pay wage increases that he had promised to his employees. Now, he himself is an interesting character, because he's been in every party. If you see over the past 15 years, he's been in PPP, Pakistan People's Party. He's been in Pakistan Muslim League. He's been in the local party Muslim Conference. And he's also been in Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, PTI, Imran Khan's party. And then after the 2023 election, he sort of walked across. He defied Imran Khan because Imran Khan had chosen someone else to be quote-unquote the prime minister of their part of Kashmir. But this This man obviously made his deal with all the rest. He's one of those politicians who's been on any side, right? And that is how he's leading that government. And he found himself very inadequate at handling this. And that is why you had this situation go out of hand. Now, what did this government do? First of all, when you have public protest, when you have mass protest, you should be able to handle it by using riot police. So you see, if you see these videos, you see very little of riot police there. In fact, in one of the videos, I think we'll play that video right now, you can see which force is involved. This is a paramilitary force, which is not carrying riot gear. They are carrying regular weapons, regular combat weapons. So this is the Pakistani Rangers who were brought in to control the situation. And what have they done, the Rangers? They fired at the protesters. So last Saturday, there was one set of protests where the police and the protesters clashed and one policeman was killed. Then the protesters said they'll march on Muzaffarabad, which is kind of capital of the region. So to break that march, the local authorities brought in the Rangers. And Rangers then fired, and that killed four more people on Monday. Those are the pictures you are seeing. After that, the government announced they were accepting all the demands, etc. As we talk now, from what I'm reading on Pakistani media, it looks like the protests have been called off, a kind of victory declared, because all the demands are met. Although some leaders of the agitation are now saying, look, we would have done so if these deaths had not taken place. So some complexity still remains there and something is still simmering. Now, first of all, where is this problem coming from? This economic problem that people are facing in the Pakistani-controlled area of Kashmir, a Pakistani-occupied area of Kashmir. This is not very different from the problems that people are facing in Pakistan's provinces. Pakistan has maintained this facade since 1947, 48, 49, that the part of Kashmir that they have occupied, that is not part of their country. So their facade is that this is Azad, this is independent, and they have the right to decide tomorrow in a quote-unquote plebiscite where they want to go. And that is the reason, it's because of that pretense that they claim that this is Azad. However, that is what causes problems, and that is where the clutter lies in the story, and I will come to that in just a minute. However, look at the larger economy of Pakistan. Larger economy of Pakistan is Pakistan's had very high inflation. Pakistan's GDP growth, in fact, according to IMF, it degrew last year in FY 2023 by 0.17%. Very marginal, but still it was negative growth. We don't know what will happen this year. Also, from being reduced to a situation where they had foreign exchange for no more than 1 month's imports, that is February last year, they got some money from IMF. Right now, they are in IMF's darbar again. In fact, asking for twice as much money as they had got the last time. So, 3 billion the last time. That was almost like emergency oxygen and steroid. Now, 6 billion. That is not going to help Pakistan. Pakistan's needs much greater. In fact, IMF has estimated that over the next 5 years, Pakistan's going to need $123 billion. Now, that has to come from somewhere. Obviously, IMF will not give it. Pakistan is addicted to borrowing from IMF. Every couple of years, they are in IMF's darbar to ask for more money. And that's what's happened right now as well. Now, for the common people, the problem is not so much what foreign exchange reserves are there. For the common people, the problem is what's happening to my income levels and also what is the inflation rate. So inflation rate in Pakistan, in fact, last year around this time, that is May 2023, had gone up to 38%. 38%. You look at all the opinion polls, surveys, journalists who are talking to voters in India as we are going through elections. You ask people, what's your biggest problem? And people say, price rise. Now, the average inflation in India has been, say, between 5 and 6%. Reserve Bank of India has a target of keeping it to 4%. That's the reason they are still not cutting the rates. That's a targeted rate, 4%. So if 5 to 6% hurts people, can you imagine how much does 38% hurt? On top of that, joblessness, a non-growing economy, in fact, a declining economy, the value of the rupee going down because a lot of the products the Pakistanis consume, of course, most of the petroleum, most of the energy that is imported with dollar. So Pakistani rupee is sitting at 277 to a dollar. So all of that causes a massive amount of popular distress. That is the distress we see on the Pakistani occupied Kashmir as well. And that is what people are now protesting about. For the Pakistanis, it's very important to keep this area calm, because at a time when the Indian side of Kashmir looks calm, is holding elections, election campaigning is taking place, all political parties are participating. One valley seat has already polled, two more will come up in a couple of months. Three seats in the Jammu Udhampur region have already polled. It looks really bad for the Pakistanis if they have trouble erupting on their side, because these are pictures that the world had gotten used to seeing on the Indian side. Now this situation has changed. So even in this dire economic situation, government of Pakistan, the federal government of Pakistan, has no choice but to buy its peace with the people in the part of Kashmir that they have occupied. One of the situations and one of the factors that makes it particularly challenging for Pakistan to address this situation is the, if I may use the word, hypocrisy that they've maintained since they became independent and since the trouble over Kashmir started. Because since then, they have maintained that this is quote-unquote an Azad territory. Azad means it's an independent territory pending a final solution of the status of all of Jammu and Kashmir, according to them, which will be settled according to the UN resolutions of 1948-49 and through a plebiscite. Now, after that, there was the Shimla Agreement in 1972, and we know with Shimla Agreement, we stopped referring to the UN resolutions, and then it was decided that this will be a bilateral issue and both countries will settle it bilaterally. Now, since then, it's been more than 50 years since Shimla Agreement, and much water has flown through the Jhelum, Chenab, Indus, etc., etc. In the process, India has gone in a particular direction, Pakistan has gone in yet another direction. In fact, Pakistan was doing all right economically and with stability until say around 1985. And that's when Pakistan took an about turn. Pakistan's economy began to decline. Pakistan's society began to get more unstable. That's when they thought that because they were winning the war in Afghanistan and they were defeating a superpower in Soviet Union, they could do something like that with India as well. That's when the big about turn in Pakistan's fortunes began. India wisely stayed on another course. It held its nerve. And that's how the paths of the two countries have diverged like this. India has gone this way, Pakistan has gone a little bit that way. Some of that has now begun to reflect also in the troubles that we are seeing on the ground. Now, what is this Azad Kashmir issue? The Azad Kashmir issue is the idea of Azad Kashmir, the concept was first mooted in Punjab by the Muslim Conference, the local party, in 1945. That was in Punjab, right? And this was in response to National Conference, that is Sheikh Abdullah's National Conference, their idea of a Naya Kashmir. So initially, even the Muslim Conference said that, okay, we want an autonomous government under the Maharaja, but the state of Jammu and Kashmir should be free. But soon enough, they decided that they were going to cast their fate with Pakistan. July 1947, Sardar Ibrahim, he reversed this policy of an independent Kashmir, and he said we'll be part of Pakistan, and he led what is called as the Punjab Uprising. Sardar Ibrahim, by the way, he remained quote-unquote president of the Pakistan-occupied Kashmir for 13 years after that. In Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, he was also hailed as Ghazi-e-Millat, that is, warrior of the nation. He was a local boy, son of the soil, but like many other leaders of their generation on both sides of the divide, both sides of the border, educated in Britain. So he went to University of London, got his law degree, then went to Lincoln's Inn, then came back and practiced in Srinagar. So he was an educated guy. He wasn't just anybody who had picked up a rifle and was fighting. So this was a political idea which the Pakistani establishment then adopted. 3rd of October 1947, Pakistan government sponsored or organized the formation of the what they called as the Provisional Government of Azad Kashmir. Since then, they've kept this pretense. Now, see, why did I say it's a hypocrisy? Very briefly. If the idea of Azad Kashmir, of calling this region Azad Kashmir, is that Kashmiris tomorrow, if there is a plebiscite, they'll be able to choose between India or Pakistan or being independent. That is fake. Because if you read even those UN resolutions, nobody is going back to those UN resolutions. They are now history and they are consigned to archives. Nobody takes them seriously in the world. Not even the best friends of Pakistan talk about them. Now, even if you follow them, even if you read them, the only options in a plebiscite, should it ever take place, is between India and Pakistan. So people of Jammu and Kashmir have to choose either to go with India or to go with Pakistan. Of course, the Indian view is there have been so many free elections in Jammu and Kashmir, so that intention to stay on in India has been expressed multiple times. However, the Pakistani idea that Azadi is an option is fake, because Azadi is not an option according to these resolutions. Further on, while the Pakistanis maintained this in 1974, 1970s after the Shimla Agreement, they worked on a provisional constitution of the part of Kashmir they occupy. That provisional constitution actually has a clause that says, in the part of Kashmir they occupy, no person or political party shall be permitted activities prejudicial or detrimental to the state's accession to Pakistan. So what is this? This is heads I win, tails you lose, right? But at the same time, I tell you that a third option is available. When you toss a coin, only two options are available, heads or tails, right? In this case, the Pakistani pretenses that Azadi as an option is available. Whereas even in the constitution, first of all, UN resolutions don't offer Azadi as an option. And second, in the constitution that the Pakistanis have drafted for this region, they've said even to carry out any activities which are prejudicial or detrimental to the state's accession to Pakistan are banned, which means even through this quote-unquote constitutional provision, that option is taken away. Now, how this causes problems is that this part of Kashmir, it does not have any MPs in Pakistan's National Assembly, because the Pakistanis must keep the pretense, ye toh azad hai, right? At the same time, Pakistan's Central Board of Revenue, or what is called as CBDT in India, that cannot run taxation in that part of Kashmir. Pakistan's law and order authorities cannot function directly there. However, we know that the place is fully controlled by the army. To manage the place, to govern the place, the Pakistanis have set up a 14-member Kashmir Council. First of all, in the federal government, they have a Ministry for Kashmir and Gilgit-Baltistan Affairs. And then they have a Kashmir Council of 14 members, which has 8 members from Pakistan-occupied Kashmir. That means the quote-unquote president and prime minister of the region, and also 6 members of the assembly there, elected members of the assembly there, and 6 from Pakistan. This committee, however, is headed by the Prime Minister of Pakistan. So once again, this charade of the region being Azad or independent, and then extending this claim to say that the same thing applies to Kashmir across the line of control as well, because the status of the entire province is today not determined. And when it's determined, people have one of 3 options. That's completely nonsensical and wrong. What the outbreak of this trouble has done is, first of all, to remind us in India of the situation that exists across the line of control. And at the same time, for the government in Islamabad, one, it highlights to them the pitfalls and the risks and the costs in continuing on with this hypocrisy of pretending that this region is Azad or independent or sovereign by itself, while denying it any of it fully. And at the same time, it's a reminder of the deep problems that exist within their own country, within their own provinces, Pakistan's provinces. Because what you're seeing in Pakistan-occupied Kashmir right now is essentially inflation riots. So if that can happen in one place, it can happen elsewhere also, because inflation at this level in particular, over a very long period, hurts everybody, except maybe the super rich.